Chapter 28. The five Marines Rossetti sent to pick Hicks up outside the lifeboat bay were well-equipped and brought him better combat armor, as well as extra weapons. They arrived in a six-wheeled personnel carrier rather than a flimsy electric jeep, and the guy behind the wheel, Private Zedong Wu, didn't drive like an engineer with a death wish. Rossetti's brief message said they were among his best, the best trained with the quickest reaction times and the highest test scores. Hicks didn't doubt it. What worried him was how utterly green they were, untried and unseasoned, with no real combat experience. And yeah, some simulations could be crazy tough, but no matter how deeply immersed you were, you always knew that if you made mistakes, you'd get graded, not killed. Unlike the shitstorm they were barreling into now. "This whole thing is a mistake," Hicks thought. Instead of rushing to find out what was blocking the cameras around the air scrubbers, they should have been engineering a mass evacuation, getting every single person off the station and into the lifeboat so they could blow Anchor Point to atoms, obliterating the goddamn aliens before they spread any further. He almost told Wu the mission was canceled and they were returning to operations, but the argument he'd have with Rossetti about that might end with him back in restraints, while the aliens overran Anchor Point and left a space station full of monsters lying in wait for new arrivals. And there would be new arrivals. Gateway would send in squads of Marines who'd have no idea what they were up against, and maybe even a few diplomats who believed they could initiate peace negotiations. Some might survive long enough to escape, only to discover they had stowaways. Hicks shook the thought away. One crisis at a time, and the crisis du jour was his being in command of five very green Marines who had no idea what they were getting into. Vasquez popped into his head, tough, fearless, ready for anything. "I only need to know one thing, where they are." Then she looked out of the memory at him. "Nobody ever knows what they're getting into, Vato. You didn't. You still don't." That was probably true, Hicks thought. Maybe he was the one with the death wish, and Walker was just a lousy driver. "Next junction, hang a right," Jackson's voice in his earpiece gave him a start. "Then at the fork, bear left and slow it right down. You'll see one of the larger traffic security rigs overhead. All those cams are dead. Whatever's going on down there starts just past that point."
"Copy that,"
Hicks glanced at Wu, who nodded to confirm he'd heard it too.
"Can you make it brighter down here? We can hardly see a thing."
"Told you, something's blocking the lights," she said. "That area doesn't usually need much candle power anyway." Hicks gave a short laugh.
"Your staff are going to turn into mole people."
"Lights eat energy. Portable lights and night vision goggles are cheaper, and why the hell am I telling you this?" Jackson gave a long, suffering sigh. "Just stop at the dead cams and, you know, proceed with caution or whatever Marines do."
"We brought a flood," someone said behind Hicks, speaking with a French-Canadian accent.
Hicks replied with a thumbs up. He made a mental note to tell Jackson it was more important to save lives than candle power, if he lived long enough. When they heard the plodding thump, thump, thump of the air scrubber, Wu slowed the carrier down and brought it to a rolling stop. The sound was oddly dampened. Never a good sign, especially with life support tech. Hicks twisted around in his seat and looked at the four Marines behind him. The husky guy directly behind him with the French-Canadian accent was Private Joe Bavet. Beside him was Corporal Binza Gardi, a dark-skinned, muscled woman who had cheerfully informed him that Binza meant fearless in Nepali. Hicks didn't tell her that wasn't always a good thing. The two in the rear-facing seat were Private Sundown Bryce, a tall, wiry guy, and Corporal Zeta Costello, a red-haired non-binary with facial tattoos Hicks recognized as tribal, although the motifs were unfamiliar.
"Okay, listen up," Hicks said, and they all put on their best paying-attention expressions. It didn't reassure him. "Really, listen. This isn't like anything you've faced before. Don't be Rossetti's best jarheads. Be here and do exactly as I say."
He paused. So far, they were with him, but they hadn't heard the good part yet. Or was it the punchline?
"We don't do this by the book. We don't pair off,"
he went on, watching their faces closely, looking for some hint that might tell him who was most likely to follow orders, who would revert to training, and who would freak out and die first.
We stay together and keep the group tight. Beauvais, keep the flood handy. Garty, you're up front with me. You keep that flamethrower primed and ready. If it moves, torch it. The same for the rest of you. If it moves, you kill it, he continued. Don't think, don't wonder, just kill. You gotta get these fuckers before they get close. You know their blood's acid, you know they don't show up on infrared, and you know you don't let them take you alive. You don't let them take anyone alive. That's an order. If somebody needs help with that, you help them. Me included. Got it? They nodded, their smooth, untried faces solemn. We're ready, Garty said. The hell they were, Hicks thought unhappily. No one ever was. Not for this. All right, he said. Move out. They climbed out of the carrier and clustered up quickly. For all their inexperience, they did well at moving together and keeping the group tight. Best trained had to count for something. With any luck, it would keep them alive. Hicks picked up the pace a little as they approached the next bend in the tunnel, and he was glad to see they kept their weapons up without his having to remind them. Garty held her flashlight in her free hand, sweeping the beam back and forth ahead of them. The thump of the air scrubber grew louder, but it still had a muffled quality. You're almost there, Hicks, Jackson's voice said. Right around the next corner.
Affirmative, Hicks spoke, just above a whisper. You getting anything from our body cams?
Too dark.
Well, you're the one who can't spare the candle power.
I've got an idea, Beauvais said suddenly.
We could move our cams near the torches.
No,
Hicks said sharply. Nobody lowers their weapon to mess with their cam. Got it?
There was a soft chorus of affirmatives as they rounded the next bend and then came to a stop. Even in the lousy light, they could all see it.
Should have tried to warn them, Hicks thought.
What the fuck is that?
Garty's tone suggested he better not bullshit her. Hicks let out a long breath as his gaze traveled over the alien resin covering the walls and the upper part of the air scrubber. The textures were uneven, some of them smooth, some rough, with ribs and craters casting strange shadows.
It's how they make themselves at home, he replied.
Yeah?
Costello gave a nervous laugh.
I hate what they've done with the place.
Should we try and blast some of that shit away?
Bryce aimed his torch at a giant lump at the top of the scrubber.
Not yet, Hicks told him. Everybody, hold your positions.
Wouldn't take but a couple seconds, Bryce said reasonably. Hicks winced.
Bryce was one of those.
He'd been helpful once, and now he couldn't stop.
Listen up, Hicks said in a low, dangerous voice. On three, we move forward, slow and easy, and we keep the group tight. Nothing else till I tell you. Got it?
There was a whispered chorus of affirmatives. He gave them the count, and they inched toward the air scrubber. A few seconds later, Wu said,
Corporal Hicks.
Hicks gave the signal to stop.
What is it?
3 o'clock. There's some kind of thick, black, I don't know, gunk or something all over the floor.
Wu told him nervously.
9 o'clock, too, Costello piped up. I'm not sure, but it might be spreading.
I've seen it before, Hicks said. It's not acid, but don't get any on you.
Copy that, Costello said. It looks like there are pieces of bone in it.
You want me to take a sample? Beauvais offered helpfully.
No,
Hicks said, almost snapping at him.
Wu, scan it. Twice.
Activating the flexi on his forearm, Wu turned in 2 complete circles, going a bit more slowly the second time. No movement, Corporal.
Nothing?
Hicks felt his heart beat faster.
You sure?
Not a twitch, just air currents from the vents. A cold spot started to form in the pit of Hicks's stomach.
Beauvais, give me the flood.
Beauvais did so, and he thumbed it on. The sudden brightness was momentarily blinding. Talk about candle power, Hicks thought, eyes watering. He could feel the warmth of the beam as he swept it over the sludge before turning it on the air scrubber. The mother-of-pearl sheen was especially pronounced. Beauvais cleared his throat.
You sure you don't want me to take a sample of it?
No.
The cold spot in Hicks's stomach had become a hard, icy lump.
Everybody, hold your positions. That's an order, he growled. Don't move. Don't shoot. Don't nobody touch nothing.
Like that, he was back in the LV-426 terraforming facility, in the area under the primary heat exchangers where all the colonists had gathered for some reason. A damned town meeting. The stuff they'd found there had been lighter in color, and the way it had covered everything had made Hicks think briefly of Pompeii. Except in Pompeii, the dead hadn't had chest cavities torn open from the inside. And then they'd found someone still alive. Dietrich had tried to reassure the woman, but she'd just kept saying, "Kill me," over and over, until it was too late and the creature inside had burst out of her. Someone blasted it with a flamethrower, but by then it was too late for all of them. Amid the heat of the flames, the sickening stink of burning flesh, and the strange chemical smell of burning alien resin, Hicks had heard the sound of a multitude of aliens unfolding their limbs, coming out of hiding.
"Movement!"
Wu was yelling.
"Everywhere! They're everywhere!"
In the flood's harsh light, the walls had come alive with squirming aliens emerging from craters and shadows in the resin. Their eyeless, elongated heads turned to the light as they crawled along uneven surfaces toward the top of the air scrubber. They were hissing now, baring their steely teeth, extending the second inner set and snapping at the air. Hicks couldn't move, couldn't speak, could only stand and watch as two creatures, one on either side at the top of the scrubber, moved toward the center, where resin had flowed down from the ceiling and hardened into an enormous, misshapen bulge like a tumor. "Should have known," Hicks thought, as the alien slashed at the bulge, tearing it away to reveal the creature within.
"And what the fuck is that?"
Costello demanded.
"It's a queen," Hicks replied. "You can tell by the size."
His voice sounded absurdly calm, almost like Bishop's. Discovering he could move again, he reached blindly for the nearest marine and came nose to nose with Wu. Hicks shoved the floodlight into his hands, told him to keep it on the queen, and knelt to open the bag with the mortar, only to find it still in pieces. It should have been assembled already. Someone had screwed up, but he wasn't going to bother kicking their ass. The aliens would do that. He tried to work quickly, looking back and forth from what he was doing to the creature in the bright circle of light. The mortar was a different model than the ones he'd used, and if it was supposed to be an upgrade, someone had screwed up there too, because it seemed to have too many parts, all of them in weird shapes. The queen was a different model too, with a grotesquely small head. Perhaps the resin around it had restricted its growth. The rest of the creature was queen-sized, positioned with arms and legs splayed wide. Its most disturbing new feature, however, was the swollen abdomen in the center of its body, like an immense blister ready to burst.
"Hey, Guardy!" Hicks yelled. She stood transfixed, gripping her flamethrower. "Got a light?"
Guardy sent a stream of fire toward the queen. It fell short by a few meters, but hit some lesser targets. The alien screamed in fury. Hicks saw Guardy cringe as she shuffled forward a few steps and gave them another blast, this time panning the stream of fire in a wide arc from left to right. More aliens burst into flames, and the poison chemical stench of burning alien flesh and resin filled the air. She glanced at him as she moved closer to the scrubber and its grotesque ornament and raised the flamethrower nozzle. This time it produced a large fireball that lasted all of a second before it vanished, followed by nothing. Hicks pushed the last component into the mortar. It jammed halfway.
"Shit," said a calm little voice in his head.
Two aliens clinging to the front of the air scrubber turned their ugly, eyeless heads toward Guardy and leaped. She screamed, and the Marines scattered in all directions.
"Fire! Damn it, fire!" Hicks yelled. "Kill the motherfuckers! Wu, where's the light? I need the light!"
Guardy's scream stopped as the aliens finished her off and threw her body aside. Wu fired on them, and Hicks heard the roaring hiss of acid burning through metal and cement, body armor, and flesh. The god-awful stench intensified as Hicks saw a hole open up on the deck, barely half a meter from the toe of his boot, just as the last mortar component unjammed and slid into place.
"Woo! The light! The fucking light!" Hicks shouted.
The mutant queen bared its teeth, hissing loudly, and then, impossibly, its swollen belly began to float away from the rest of its body. Because it wasn't a belly, Hicks realized. It was the bulbous tip of a very long, nasty tail,
His stomach rose threateningly toward his throat as the queen's tail undulated in a slow, sinuous air dance.
"Keep your eye on the ball," said the calm little voice in Hicks's mind as he grabbed the mortar shell. There was an ugly, wet, ripping noise. "Too late," the voice added, as the fat tip of the queen's tail popped like a bubble, releasing an enormous black cloud.
"Bishop, shut down the fans," Hicks shouted.
"Got it," Bishop replied, unruffled. No, he didn't, Hicks thought, as the black mist disappeared into the fans a fraction of a second before they shut down.
"Too late as usual," the voice in his head said.
"The vents!" Hicks bellowed. "Seal the vents!"
He dropped the mortar shell into the tube and turned away from it.
"Done," replied Bishop.
"You had better." The explosion drowned out the rest, shook the floor and sent rubble and acid flying in all directions.
"Should have run," the voice in Hicks's brain chided. "Too late again."
He raised his head slowly. Most of the scrubber had been demolished, including the queen. The poison chemical stink became even stronger, making his eyes sting and his throat burn. For a fraction of a second, he imagined breathing an aerosol of acid blood from vaporized aliens, then shut it down. It wasn't time to imagine shit. It was time to bug the fuck out. He turned to tell Wu they were leaving, but the Marine was down on the deck, his body shaking wildly, arms flailing, legs kicking. Hicks backed up a step, lifted his rifle, and blew Wu's head off. Then looked around for the rest of the squad. Costello was face down in the sludge, body twitching. Beauvais and Bryce had been torn apart. His squad had been wiped out. Again.
"Too late," said the voice in his head. "You're always too late."
Hicks used his pulse rifle on all of them anyway.